In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
We are live, and this is the Energemetra 6 podcast, episode 27. And welcome, everybody. Today, we have Mel and Luke and oldest, second, and third all to read parts. And sort of amusingly enough, most of today's kind of a monologue, I think. So welcome, everybody. Glad everybody's here. Let's hit the V for V ad and get rolling. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. And today we are reading The Veil of Mysteries, Chapter 4. If they succeed in eradicating the deep myths, that act obliterates our identity and reduces us to nothing more than chattel. Paul Kasizia, final address to the Telestry, year 262 NST. They met Andrew, Shannon, Shauna, and Laura in the nearest of the station's cafeterias. There was a small crowd of locals who stared after them with curiosity but kept their distance. After they sat, Rachel launched into an explanation of her problem over the station's lunch hour. Andrew frowned thoughtfully as she spoke, then nodded when she finished.
So the council doesn't want you to go. What did he say?
He inclined his head to Nate. Nate gave him a rueful smile. I said we might be able to talk you into taking us if I ask nicely. Andrew laughed.
Adamant's yours. You don't have to ask. I'm pretty sure even Shannon's on board now.
He looked over to his sister with a questioning expression. Shannon sat for a long time as the silence grew more and more tense. Finally, she said,
I do want you to stay with us, Nate, even if that means Ty stays too.
Nate smiled more broadly. I'm glad to hear it. Something tells me trying to find a ship as fast as Adamant would take me clear to the Milky Way. The silence returned then, though it was less hard-edged than before, until Shauna cut in.
Didn't you say the vessel belonged to Paul Kasizia? I'd like to see it. He was Dad's best friend.
Rachel looked over at Shauna and her jaw dropped.
Your dad was Jim Logan? But that's impossible.
Shauna immediately looked abashed, but Nate chuckled. You haven't properly met John and Rachel yet, have you? You came on board after I did last night. Shauna's eyes widened.
Wait, John and Rachel Kasizia?
All three of the siblings and Laura were staring wide-eyed at John and Rachel now, with something like awe. Laura said,
We've heard stories about you and your dad our whole lives. Everyone still wonders what happened to you. Most people think you're dead.
After that, it took a full half hour to tell John and Rachel how the four had come to the Aurora Galaxy and then explained to the others how John and Rachel had been imprisoned for over 1,000 standard years in Crystal, and Paul had gone no one knew where. When they finished their stories, John and Rachel were looking back and forth between Nate and the others, while the four from the Milky Way stared at John and Rachel in turn.
"You killed a changed?"
John asked, eyeing Nate with surprise and wonder.
"And he banished the shade inside it, too,"
Shauna exclaimed.
"Guess that explains why none of you have a Recomocula, too,"
John said. That required a whole new round of explanations that left the Logans and Laura all staring at the pattern that was visible above John, Rachel, and Nate's collars thoughtfully. For his part, Nate was glad the other diners were keeping a respectful distance. The rumors and explanations that would have to follow such revelations would be interesting, if anyone overheard them. After a moment, Andrew looked at Nate.
"So, when do you want to take them? We could go right now if you want."
Nate shook his head. "How about tomorrow?" He looked at John and Rachel. "I'd like to spend some time here today, and I'm going to inform our hosts of our plans before we go." Rachel looked blank as she absorbed his intentions, then stared at Nate wide-eyed, laughing aloud. Andrew gave Nate a dubious frown. Nate smiled crookedly. "A little humility would go a long way for this council. Give them a chance." With lunch finished, Rachel led them to the station's conclave, the great hall in which the people of Lighthouse Station had public forums and discussions. The massive amphitheater also served as their center of education. When they arrived, the afternoon lesson was just beginning. The conclave was at the very heart of the station's central core, and it was bigger around than Adamant, even if the ceiling was only 2 stories high at the very center. As Shauna first walked into the huge room, she stopped suddenly, breathing hard. When Shannon touched Shauna's shoulder with a concerned look, she shivered and looked down at her feet.
"It's so big."
After taking a deep breath, Shauna looked up again, her jaw firm, and started walking forward once more.
"It's the first day of the month,"
Rachel said.
"They told us they teach the story of the betrayal and the escape on the first day of every month so everyone remembers it."
Ty waved at them from a seat near the bottom center of the amphitheater-shaped room, and they went to join him as others trickled into the chamber. All four of Nate's friends from the Milky Way stared around unabashed at the crowd. Laura was the only one of the four to speak, but she clearly voiced what they were all thinking.
"So many people. Is this what a city is like?"
Ty laughed and shook his head.
"Not even close. Just wait till you see a real planetary capital."
Andrew frowned as he gazed around thoughtfully.
"We were in Cassisia City, but we never really left the ship. Looking out at it from the bridge is nothing like being a part of it."
He smiled at Laura.
"You should have seen it. A real city with people walking around in the open air."
Meanwhile, Elder Bettina Strong stood at the podium, paging through an ancient-looking paper book that was nearly the size of the podium itself.
"Today,"
her voice boomed across the conclave, taking advantage of a room shaped with acoustic properties man had been using since before history was recorded. Nate could see she was giving herself a slight boost with Energemetra 6 as well. The room grew silent instantly as she paused for a moment, then continued.
"Today we remember the story of the betrayal, the great sin that damaged humanity forever, and the monsters who perpetrated it upon us."
Her voice had a cadence and tone that was stilted, and Nate realized she was reciting as much as reading.
"In ancient days,"
she continued,
"humans inhabited only one world, Earth. There was harmony and prosperity among the people. In those days, we had not been given the use of the fields or driven to break ourselves upon the uncaring rock of entropy in its use. All was at peace."
Next to Nate, Rachel snorted quietly. She leaned over and whispered,
"Harmony and prosperity? A 1,000 years sure changes a lot.
Her words didn't carry far, a testament to the room's design as much as her low tone. Nate gave her a quelling look, and she shrugged, grumbling a bit under her breath. Elder Strong was still speaking.
In the laboratories of Earth, they developed many strange technologies. Foremost among these laboratories was Dyna Syntronic, and it was their scientists who first discovered Energemetra 6. Paul Kazizia was one of the warriors assigned to protect this ancient laboratory, and it is from his lips and his writings that we remember. It was then the betrayer made himself known, Lastus Rayland, the bringer of entropy. He took the seed, the kernel of power that allows the fields to be touched. He stole it from Dyna Syntronic Laboratories. Upon it, he worked the wiles of ancient medicine, and it became a disease that spread across the face of gentle Earth. The princes and powers of the world attempted to defeat Lastus, but to no avail. His preparations were too perfect. As the world fell to his dreadful disease, Lastus took control of everything. But, as is his way, the Lightmaker raised up a tiny force to stand against Lastus' might. Paul Kazizia and Carl Winton led Bright Future against Lastus and the forces of darkness. Though they struggled against the tyrant, their fight was hopeless. Lastus' control of the world was too strong for mortal men to break. It was then, in humanity's darkest hour, that Paul led the survivors to use the marvelous technology of Dyna Syntronic, building space vessels that would allow them to leave their dying world. But Lastus was not to be beaten so easily. He too had built such a vessel, and he sent Lana Trent to destroy Paul and his tiny group of refugees. She caught them beyond Earth's moon and engaged in battle most terrible. Lana used her tremendous grasp on Energemetra 6 to hold their ships fast and destroy them one by one. Then, when all seemed lost, Paul used his own tremendous power to whisk his forces away from the home they had always known into the darkness of the between. They traveled through the great darkness, and the Lightmaker was with them, for it was here they came, to Aurora, our new home.
Three seats down from Nate, Shannon shook her head slowly.
This is weird,
she said.
We all thought they died.
She frowned.
And Rachel's right. This story got twisted.
He barely heard her, but a sharp glance from Elder Strong showed that she'd caught more than Nate had thought possible. She stared at Shannon for a long moment with a strange look on her face, then said,
We have with us today John and Rachel Kazizia and the Bright Star himself, so named by the Keeper. Perhaps one of them has some insight to share with us on the escape or the betrayal?
She sounded both serious and curious, and for a frozen heartbeat, Nate was petrified. Then he nodded slowly, rising to his feet. Nate felt to his very core that he needed to speak to these people, for this was his purpose in the Vale, but he didn't know what to say. Lightmaker, what now? As he ascended to the podium, Nate grasped Energemetra 6 and quickly copied what he saw Elder Strong doing. Holding just enough power to amplify his voice for those at the edges of the amphitheater. Elder Strong stepped back from the podium to make room for Nate, standing at a respectful distance, and he nodded to her as he turned to survey the room, searching for something to say. Finally, in the moment when he needed it most, clarity descended upon him, and he saw his purpose, his whole purpose, as he had once before when he first found himself in the Aurora Galaxy on the vessel Ocarist. This time there was no doubt that what he saw came from somewhere outside himself, whether it was the great Schemic or the Lightmaker or some other force that had implanted the knowledge in his mind before he ever appeared in the Aurora Galaxy, he wasn't sure. He knew this story, the true story, uncorrupted by the passage of time or the flawed perspectives of its storytellers. When Nate began to speak, he was quiet at first. "People of Lighthouse Station, I'm glad to be here. If I had a place of my own in the galaxy, I would be happy to claim Sanctuary as home. The people of Sanctuary are a breath of fresh air to me, after having spent my last month at the Telestry. As Elder Strong said, Earth was the ancient home of humanity. However, human nature has not changed in the 1,000 years since the escape, or in the period before it, the betrayal. Human nature was just as dark then as it is now. Earth was a terrible place of war and famine and death. As if man is not evil enough on his own, even in the time before the escape, the people of Earth were haunted by the Shades, evil beings that in those days lived in..." Nate paused, searching for a way to describe the reality of how the universe was folded and set upon itself, then shrugged. "They lived in what you would think of as another dimension of space, the twilight, from which they can see our universe, but we cannot see theirs. The Shades blinded the people of Earth to reality. The Shades used every trick and deception they could contrive to convince humanity to kill each other for sport. Dynacentronic was a laboratory, as Elder Strong said, and they discovered Energemetra 6, how the world is built of and upon it. But it was then the Shades saw their opportunity, and Yamak, the most powerful and evil of all the immortal beings that live in the twilight, hatched a terrible plan. It was Lena Trent who stole the technology that brought the fields to the hands of men and took it to Lastis Rolland. In those days, the world was torn by war and strife, stirred up at the bidding of the Shades they couldn't see and didn't believe in. Lastis determined to put an end to war, and he made a bargain with the Shades. They gave Lastis the knowledge to create injections that imbued himself and a chosen few of his lackeys with the power to manipulate Energemetra 6. Carl Winton was Lastis' chief lieutenant. He saw the great evil Lastis was creating, how Lastis would take power for himself and use it for whatever purpose he chose. With the Shades at his back, Lastis' grip on the world would be stronger and more evil than ever before. It was then the Shades' deeper plan became reality. Yamak provoked a fight between Carl and Lastis, and with Yamak's connivance from within the twilight itself, their titanic struggle blasted a hole, a puncture through the fabric of space into twilight. In his own struggle to puncture reality itself, Yamak twisted the fabric of being, and it was this abomination that entwined entropy with Energemetra 6. You see, Energemetra 6 was not intended to be used by humans for their own power, nor was it intended to bring a premature end to those who did have the means to use it. From our side, the puncture was invisible, both to us and the Shades themselves. It allowed passage in one direction. It was not the effect that Yamak had intended, and once a Shade passed through, it became trapped on this side of the rift. Even this was enough to give the Shades direct access to humanity, and they took full advantage, manipulating our genetics and creating monsters the likes of which we had never imagined. After his fight with Lastis, Carl saw that Earth's plight was dire. He knew Yamak would not rest until it controlled every living human. For it is jealous and despises us with a hatred that knows no limit. In desperation, Carl took the injection Lastis had made and created what today you call the Plague. The Plague was a mercy in disguise, conceived by the Lightmaker and unleashed on humanity by Paul Kasizia and Carl Winton. It was the Plague that gave us E6. It restored the balance between the powerless people of the world and Lastis and his chosen friends. Nate stopped for a long moment, then shook his head. It was Paul who decided the people must flee. When Carl escaped from Lastis and the aftermath of their battle, Paul enlisted his help to build ships that would take them away from Earth and the terrible destruction of the Shades. Building the vessels in secret as they did was a tremendous, costly effort, and Lastis hunted Bright Future relentlessly. As Elder Strong said, Lena Trent caught them in space, but the escape was no intentional exercise of Paul's might. Nate smiled wryly. In the battle that raged between Paul and Lena, with so many of the refugees already in hibernation for what they thought must be a voyage of decades, space was rent by fire and destruction. Raw E6 was unleashed in ways that had never been tried before. What you call the escape, given by the mercy of the Lightmaker, seemed no more than an accident to Paul and his passengers. Instead of the destruction that was intended, a path was opened from the Milky Way to the Abyss, here in Aurora. It was thus that the first colonists came to Ateria, 1,000 standard years ago, only 150 Earth years for the Milky Way. Silence reigned across the amphitheater as the people digested Nate's words. After giving them more than a full minute to think about what he'd said, Nate spoke again. The puncture is still open. The shades can still escape Twilight, though they still may not return to their proper realm. And from within the Twilight, their elders can reach into Aurora itself. In the Milky Way, humans are hunted like animals across the stars and made into monsters if they're caught. And the truth? Even here, the truth has been lost. The people of Aurora have forgotten. Entropy strangles them in their youth, and they squabble over power just as their ancestors did on ancient Earth. It is for this reason I've come here. Nate's eyes were downcast when he finished, but after a moment he raised them again, catching every eye he could in an audience that now seemed vast. The Lightmaker always provides a way out, and there is always a path to redemption. There is also a cost and a choice to be made. Nate stepped back from the podium with a nod to Elder Strong, then took a position to one side of her. Elder Strong turned her head to give him a long, measuring look, but didn't move. The crowd was murmuring around him, with more and more hostility bubbling up to the surface the longer he listened. One man called, "No respect for tradition!" Despite the general conversation among the crowd, which did not rise above a murmur, the few who rose to their feet to approach the center of the room seemed respectful enough. The first to reach the dais stepped up to the podium, and he turned to look back at Nate.
"Thank you, Bright Star,"
said the young man, barely older than a teen himself.
"My name's Ivan. I was wondering, would you be willing to answer some questions?"
Nate nodded and stepped forward to clasp his hand. Then the young man smiled at him and said, loud enough for everyone to hear,
"You spoke of shades. We have a few stories about beings like that, and you said they can reach into Aurora. But could you tell us, can the shades reach us here in the Vale? Paul's great gift has protected us for centuries. Are we to fear them even here?"
Nate nodded again, then amplified his voice once more to be sure all would hear. "Ilvin, I'm happy to answer your question. When Paul put the veil in place, he set protections around and upon it. It is possible the shades could reach you here from the Twilight, but only if someone willingly allowed them access. The galaxy outside the veil, on the other hand..." Nate trailed off, looking troubled. "As to whether they could come here from the Milky Way, the answer is yes, but only if someone shows them the path. The passage between the Milky Way and the Abyss is sealed, and only a few know how to find it. The Shades do not, or did not, until recently." Nate turned a thoughtful gaze to Andrew and his sisters. The next question was the worst that Nate had to answer, and the only one that really captured the mood of the crowd. A short, angry woman all but screeched at him.
"You think you can just show up here and contradict 1,000 years of history? Who do you think you are?"
Nate's gaze was firm as he scanned the audience. As to whether my words are true, I give you only the knowledge the Lightmaker gave to me. This didn't seem to help his case with the crowd, though the rest of his questioners were unfailingly polite, creating a strange contrast with the underlying atmosphere. The next question came from Alina, a middle-aged lady with frown lines between her eyes. She actually curtsied when she stepped forward to speak.
Brightstar, could you tell me? We've long been taught that Energimitra 6 represents balance, that good and evil, light and darkness, past and future, all find their balance in the fields.
She shrugged helplessly. Nate nodded. What exactly are you asking me, Alina? Alina frowned for a moment, then she said almost desperately,
Energimitra 6 is not just for physical power, it's our spiritual source. How can it never have been intended for us to use it?
Ah, Nate shook his head. E6, like the rest of the universe, was made by the Lightmaker, a tool for his own use, and for those to whom he gave the means. Any who find their spiritual source in the fields and not the Lightmaker are lost. And, Nate's lips quirked, but his eyes were full of compassion. Looking to E6 as your source of balance is like looking to a hurricane for strength. Strength it may have, but not for you to borrow. The third question was from an old man, so stooped and wrinkled his age was impossible to guess. He stared at Nate almost bleakly and said,
You've given us much up today. How do we live with this? How do we spend our days in fear knowing such a great evil is just outside our door?
Nate nodded respectfully to him and was silent in thought, then said, When the escape landed on Eteria, the people asked for a way to live with their new power. Paul gave them the tenets, but they could not live by them. Humanity faces defeat and destruction in the Milky Way. Here in Aurora, you cannot see further than your own gain, whether in the power-hungry Telestry or here, where you huddle behind a wall of dust in fear of what the outside world may do to you. Nate paused, looking over the gathered people. The time is coming for the people of Vale and Telestry alike to be renewed and equipped to defeat the enemies that have awaited them for so long. That is my purpose in this galaxy. First, to see the truth restored to you. Second, to equip you for the battles that lie before you. Third, to face the enemies you cannot. For almost a full hour, Nate answered question after question, looking to satisfy each of his questioners as best he was able. Their hostility never really abated, instead trailing off into sullen silence. When finally no more came forward, Nate stepped down from the dais to return to his friends. They too were rising to leave when Nate made it back to them, but he saw Elder Rebus approaching from the other side. When he reached them, Rebus gave them all a smile, while Rachel glared at him, and John watched with a frown.
So glad you came, Rebus said. Tell me, do you think us backward here in Sanctuary?
There was something malicious behind his eyes, and his bait was so obvious as to be rancid. Nate stared at Rebus for long enough to make him uncomfortable, then said, I think lies, even polite ones, are an abomination. You tell me. Are you really glad we came? Rebus looked shocked for a moment, then dropped his act entirely, turning his previous question into an accusation.
You come here, to the most sacred and protected place in the entire galaxy, speaking down to us, the keepers of the histories, as to inferiors. Your arrogance is tactless and juvenile.
Nate stared at Rebus, expressionless. Again, you fail to value truth over your own ego. To answer your other question, Sanctuary is a healthy place, mostly. I'm glad I came.
Rebus rolled his eyes sarcastically. And what will ye do next? Begin your campaign to bring down the Dominion, I suppose? Nate snorted. You suppose a great deal, Elder Rebus. Nate gave Rebus a long look as his friends filed out of their seats past him, craning their necks to see his interaction. Finally, he asked, I understand you've decided not to use Sanctuary's resources to help John and Rachel reach Hope One? Rebus nodded, his eyes sharpening once more.
That's correct. The Council determined the risk to public stability, not to mention to the Kassizias themselves, was unnecessary at this time. As the keepers of the relics left to us by Paul, such is our right.
Nate frowned slightly. Andrew and his sisters have graciously agreed to allow us the use of adamant for the visit. We'll be going tomorrow. If you would inform the rest of the council, I would appreciate it. As Paul's heirs, such is their right. With Nate's final words, Rebus looked ready to explode. He remained silent, however. Whether it was from shock or simply because he was strangling on his own rage wasn't clear. Then another voice spoke from Nate's right.
So, you've decided to flout the council's authority?
It was Elder Jabin, standing just a few paces away, his own expression a thunderhead of disbelief and righteous anger. Nate considered his words for a moment, then shook his head. John and Rachel are the last living colonists to leave Hope One, as well as Paul's heirs. If anyone has a right to it, they do. Even if the council wanted to claim jurisdiction, could you reach it? Jabin's frown deepened.
The vessel has been inside Sanctuary ever since Paul left. At the very least, it would be courteous to...
Nate shook his head again, more firmly. Elder Jabin, I understand that your people venerate Hope One, and you don't want it disturbed for that reason, if no other. As far as I'm concerned, that's not enough to overcome the Kassizia's need or their right to see it, and I don't need anyone's permission to take them there. Nate saw the instant when Rebus' expression went suddenly from thunderous to crafty. As if something new had just occurred to him, Rebus said to Jabin,
To the contrary, I think this is a capital idea.
Jabin stared at Rebus, bewildered.
What? I do, Rebus nodded. They must, of course, take a number of the council with them to be certain nothing is disturbed on the vessel.
Jabin continued to stare, as if he'd never seen Rebus before. Then understanding seemed to dawn.
And you wish to be that council member?
Rebus' eyes widened, and he laughed as if the idea were ridiculous. Like the rest of his persona, it was an act, and Nate felt as if he needed a shower.
Of course not. You and I are too old for such a thing. Young Master Galton is a much better choice, don't you agree?
Once more, Jabin looked confused, but he shook his head in irritation.
I don't see that we have the capability to forbid such an expedition at any rate. If Jesse wants to go, he may, of course.
Frowning, Nate nodded.
We'd be happy to have him.
Nate wasn't sure what Rebus' game was, but Jesse Galton had so far seemed solidly on their side, and having him along for such a trip might actually be to their advantage. After a moment, Jabin sighed.
Will you at least promise to leave it intact when you finish?
Nate looked at John and Rachel, his eyebrows raised. Rachel glared at Jabin but nodded reluctantly. John just shrugged. Nate said,
I don't think any of us wants to destroy it.
Jabin looked grim.
That will have to do, I suppose.
He paused, then sighed again.
The reason I sought you out was actually unrelated. How much do you know of Kievan Redding?
It was Nate's turn to frown.
He was the first person to find me when I awoke aboard Ocarist. When he asked to join us, he told me he had been sent to spy on me by Loredan. But originally, the Keeper sent him to spy on Loredan. Jeban shook his head. To my knowledge, the boy was never sent anywhere as a spy. He grimaced. I say boy, but Kievan is at least 15 standard years old. He ages differently. As many would put it, he is an odd. He was exiled for being a troublemaker. We hoped a dose of the outside world would cure him. His bloodline comes straight from the wild man, and his family's always been troubled. Behind Nate, Ty laughed. The others all looked blank. Nate glanced over his shoulder at Ty, who grinned.
The wild man was the first one who prophesied about you, Brightstar. He came through the escape on the same ship Paul Kassizia did. Hope One, I guess? And they say people who came through the escape were never quite right. He was extra special, though. The Telestry kicked him out 3 times. They finally killed him when he came back again the 4th time. His name was Seaver, right? Seaver Radink?
Jeban smiled at Ty's insouciance. Redding, actually. The name changed on the 3rd generation when Seaver's son left a bastard and wouldn't claim him. Kievan's mother and sisters still live here, but the council asked him to leave after he tried to sabotage Lighthouse Station 2 standard years ago. He did relay some information to us about Telestic Loridan's plans once. Jaben's mouth twisted. We asked that you take him with you when you leave. Nate nodded. Kievan's already said he's coming with me. He frowned. Has anyone seen Kievan since we got here? Jeban shook his head sadly. He's been with his mother and his sisters since he arrived. Hasn't come out of their quarters once, though his mother and sisters were all here a few minutes ago. They spent the rest of the station's day cycle exploring and talking with people. Shauna even found the station's head gardener and swapped some seeds with him, trading 2 of the varieties they grew on Adamant for a vine fruit she had never seen before, but that he promised would survive in null gravity for long periods. Jesse also invited all of them to join in an Energemetra 6 practice session that was held in the conclave after the station's final meal of the day. Nate, Shannon, Rachel, and Ty all attended, and though Nate couldn't say he learned much, he was again impressed by the friendly, genuine attitudes the people of Sanctuary showed. Despite the general atmosphere, however, Nate was left with an uneasy feeling that night as he drifted off to sleep. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that ends Chapter 4 of The Veil of Mysteries. Good job, everybody. I sure appreciate it. 3rd, 2nd, oldest, Luke, and Mel. Appreciate you guys being here to read. And to our audience, thank you. And I guess we'll catch everybody next week.